Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Tappet, and I am here in the studio with Laron Landis. And Grizzly Mama Patty Fink should be along shortly. We haven't heard.
We haven't heard.
Okay, well, we're expecting her then, any minute. Traffic. She goes on Woodall Rogers. Have you tried Woodall Rogers lately?
No, I never go that way.
No. Anyway, we have a guest today. Our guest today, here is Grizzly Mama Patty Fink.
I thought it was Mama Grizzly.
Oh, Mama Grizzly. Okay, whatever. And Raphael McDonald will be joining us in a few minutes also. But our main guest, our important guest, I hope Raphael's listening, our important guest here today is Lee Taft. Lee is the Associate Executive Director for GLBT Programs and Strategic Partnerships. How's that for getting that right?
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. During the Lawrence v. Texas case, he was the director of Lambda Legal, South Central Office, and after the Lawrence decision, he left Lambda Legal to found his own consulting practice as an ethicist. That's a mouthful.
It is.
At this hour of the morning, it's not coming out. One of his areas of expertise, though, is apologies. And he was instrumental in helping the city of Dallas navigate through the fake drug scandal, weren't you, Lee? Let's just talk about that. Just give us an idea of what it is that you did. And, Laron, move that mic over there.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think this one is even on.
Yeah, it's on. It's on. You're just not turned up. So, there you are. Okay, it's fine.
Okay.
Now, you were involved in navigating the city through the fake drug scandal, which actually saved the city countless dollars.
What happened is Madeline Johnson, who was then the city attorney, called me, and she wanted me to come in and be the special litigator on the cases. And when we talked about what I was doing in my practice, and what the quick version of what I do in my ethics practice is I work with organizations that have made mistakes, and I teach them mistakes that subject them to legal liability. And I teach them if they're willing to be truthful, account to the party who's been harmed, offer an authentic, and that means evidentiary binding, an apology that could be used against them in court. Mm-hmm. I teach them if they're willing to do that, they can interrupt traditional litigation cycles. Madeline and I talked about that, told her what I was doing, and she said it's exactly what the city should do. The city had culpability because about 10 years before the fake drug scandal happened, the city had policies and procedures in place that allowed a similar, not the same, but a similar kind of event to occur. Mm-hmm. The city should have changed policies and procedures and didn't. So the city was vulnerable in this situation. Madeline knew that, and Madeline wanted the city to account authentically for it. So what Madeline asked me to do is to help her create a process which would guide the city through a process of transparency and account for the harms that were caused to these people who were wrongfully arrested and jailed. So that's what we did. The neatest part about it, the neatest piece in it, was the resolution that our city council passed. It's a multi-part resolution. But the critical pieces are that the city says that in the war on drugs, things went wrong, and that the city had culpability in why they went wrong. It wasn't, we had a bad cop and a bad narc, and the city wasn't responsible for their criminal conduct, but the city had civil responsibility for how things turned out. And so what we did, the city council, with Madeline's guidance, what the city council did, it passed this multi-point resolution. Apologized with a fault-admitting apology to people who were wrongfully jailed. It directed Mary Soom as a city manager to change and etch this into the city's memory so it couldn't happen again. It directed Madeline as a city attorney to enter into an expedited and fair settlement process. It directed David Kunkel as the chief of police to change the policies and procedures so it couldn't happen again. It was an incredible experience to do this, and it was wonderful to see that our city had the integrity to do this. Mm-hmm. It's rare. Cities are sued across the country, and they don't usually do this. Our city did. And what the result was is that within about 6 months of that resolution coming forward, all the cases were resolved, and the cases were resolved for a fraction of what the city thought it would be exposed to. And it wasn't that the people were unfairly compensated. What happened is they were fairly compensated, but you don't have the McDonald's $5 million cup of coffee, because by being fair and honest, you remove the incendiary piece, and people can just resolve things fairly.
And the city also saved the cost of lengthy litigation.
But the most important piece, I think, ultimately, to see that what happened was, is that what could have been a racial fracture in our city didn't occur. And now when the fake drug cases are talked about in the city of Dallas, they're talked about with the integrity with which the city responded.
And deeply in the past. It's not something that, you know, keeps edging toward now.
Right, because it also wasn't something that kept going on and on and on and happened. We took care of it, and
I think a prime example of someone, an organization that has failed miserably in opening themselves to liability and never taking full responsibility is the Roman Catholic Church. And we see that time and again around the world. And if they had just laid it out there and made significant changes so that everyone knew they were sincere, they wouldn't be dealing with what they're dealing with now.
It's the process that I teach, and what I'm really teaching is, remember, I have a legal background, and then I went to divinity school. And so what I'm really teaching is a process of secular repentance. So the fact that the Catholic Church, which should hold the key to understanding repentance, has completely failed in any authentic way to account for the harm that they've created is a travesty. I mean, think about what would have happened after the Rudy Koss case, when Wendell Turley and Sylvia Demarest brought that case. And it's a $100 million verdict against the Catholic Church. What if the church had
And that was the case here in Dallas,
right,
for people who don't know.
It was
in Dallas. And if the church had responded authentically, if it had really noticed that what the church had done was wrong, knowing they have pedophile priests, moving them to another parish, allowing them continuing access to children, if the church had responded and acknowledged what it had done, it had looked deeply at the systemic problem, imagine the shape, how different the church would be today. It would be such a different world if the church had decided to be truthful and transparent in the wake of that tragic occurrence for all those children.
And then, and the Rudy Koss case was, 15 years ago? 20
at
years
least.
Ago?
Yeah. It was the early 90s.
And this is still going on.
It was 97? Oh, I thought it was earlier. Okay.
And it seems like it's still going on, and they have never really come clean.
It's because they keep not... I mean, a critical piece in what I teach is that I really teach a five-point process so that there is remorse, there's an explanation, there's an apology, and an apology that is fault-admitting, not just we're sorry you're suffering.
But if I offended anyone?
Or if I offended anyone. it's the apology that what I did was wrong, and my wrongful conduct have caused you harm. But then there are two additional pieces in this. So you have remorse, explanation, apology, but then you also have an accommodation. And then critically, lessons learned. What did we learn? How did this problem happen? And what are we going to do systemically to correct what has happened so it doesn't happen again, and so that other people who are similarly situated aren't harmed?
Yeah. You know, and Raphael did come in. You know, an example that comes to mind, Raphael, with that is pilot requests a full change of pillows and blankets due to gay rights activists on board, and American Airlines actually not only apologized finally, and it took a few days before they actually even acknowledged what they had done, but there was the systemic change. What they did was people from the resource center worked with American Airlines, and within 6 months, that was the airline that was the safest airline for somebody with HIV to be flying. I mean, that is a real systemic change from the pilots are afraid that gay people are on their flight.
So. It's the marker of an authentic repentance.
Mm-hmm.
One marker is a willingness to apologize in a way that subjects you to liability, that when you acknowledge your apology is transparent, and it isn't, you aren't protected. You're there, and you're raw in your wrongness. But critically, then, is what have you learned, and just what you just described. Mm-hmm. It's an indication, it's a deep marker of the sincerity of the apology, so you know it isn't just launched strategically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done from a place of sincerity and a recognition of that I have done something wrong, and I want to change it so I don't continue to do that.
Okay, so all of that was an introduction to something that's been going on in Oaklawn this week. Chris Kroc is a talk show host on another station.
Most definitely not this
one. Not this one, no.
But not too far from here at all.
No, it's right down the street from here. If he was on this station, I guarantee you station policy is he'd be gone. However, he made some on-air homophobic remarks and rants about Joel Burns. What he said was that the gist of it was that Joel Burns was inappropriate talking about his personal experiences at the city council, and he was wasting the council's time. But the main part of the rant that offended so many people was he was doing the stereotypical talking with a lisp. He was and he was attacking Burns personally. He was not attacking what he had done. He was attacking him personally using homophobic language.
He attacked the genuine story. Basically, said that he was doing it for media attention. You know, I almost called him a media whore.
Well, and was he successful? Well, in this station that's one of the lowest rated stations around, all of a sudden everybody has heard of Chris Kroc. Nobody ever heard of him before. So anyway,
he looks like he's about 12.
Yeah, he is young. He's in his 20s. But in his apology, Kroc acknowledged that he crossed the line by attacking Burns personally and using a lisp. He also says he never intended to advocate bullying or to advocate hurting anyone. And that he believes God loves gay people as much as he loves anyone else. However, he goes on to say that he stands by his original point. And this is his quote. He said, "I'm in no way backing down from my opinion that Joel Burns has absolutely no business bringing this bullying stuff up in front of the city council. It is not the proper forum. Bullying is not an issue for city council to address, let alone gay bullying. Straight bullying, gay bullying have no business in front of the city council. It's a waste and it's useless. I was bullied when I was a kid." I think that's a real interesting point. "Just as much, if not worse, than Joel Burns. For 2 years, I was terrorized by two different guys. And Joel being bullied, his story is no better than my story. His story is not worth any more attention than my story is. So it shouldn't be treated differently or specially. And I'll make it clear again, I do not condone homosexual behavior. For those who don't know what condone means, I don't approve of homosexual behavior, and I am not apologizing for my opinion. Now, I want to share with you some emails that I got, because, as I said, we got many emails over the past several days, and I want you to notice the irony, because the same people who accuse me of bullying are bullying me." Now, my advice to them was file an FCC complaint. Just file a complaint. There's a real quick link. You go to the FCC's website and you tell them exactly what you heard and why it's inappropriate for our community. And that's a legitimate FCC complaint. We have city ordinances that prevent discrimination. That makes anything that's homophobic being broadcast on public airwaves inappropriate. But the apology, it's a complicated apology, isn't it, Lee?
It is complicated. I mean, I think that you have to sort of pull it apart,
mm-hmm.
because you've accurately stated what he said. One thing I think we have to sort of hold in check is we are, of course, now continuing to talk about Chris,
mm-hmm.
and so we're giving him airtime again, which is precisely what I think he was mm-hmm. in part motivated by. So we have to be sort of self-aware that we are now participating in part of his strategy mm-hmm. by even having right. the conversation. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I think that we have to give him the right. He is a talk host guy. He has the right to have his opinion. What I heard when I listened to his original rant, and Raphael forwarded me links to it, so I was able to hear his original rant. And what he did was, he was saying this, you know, his objection to Joel Burns was that the topic was inappropriate in front of a city council. That was where his starting place was.
Did he mention also that all the city council people were wearing pink for breast cancer awareness that same day? It seems equally appropriate or inappropriate for a city council to draw attention to.
I think what we have to be careful is that I'm not going to make a decision whether Chris is right or not in that opinion.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I'm suggesting that as a talk show host,
uh-huh.
he sure had the right to say, "I don't think this topic is appropriate for
sure.
city council."
Sure,
had the
sure.
right to do that. Where he crossed the line was that he was using a stereotypical voice that we hear, you know, where people talk about how we lisp or something like that, and he was using that voice, and he was mocking that. In his apology, when he talks about his apology, he said that he wanted to hold on to the fact that as a passionate person, he has a right to his opinions. And he said that as a passionate person, he has to be careful because there's a moment at which, in his passion, he may cross a line and attack someone's humanity. And he said, I crossed the line, and I apologize for that. That was wrong. He acknowledges that. That's the kind of apology that it sounds authentic. He then, though, then comes back and says, where he wants to be, you know, clear about this, that he says, but he does, he holds on to his opinion that the conversation was not properly located. Perfectly appropriate. It's where apologies get complicated, because when you're stepping into apology, you want to acknowledge your wrongdoing. But when you start trying to hold on to the framework in which the wrongdoing occurred, it starts seeming pretty strategic, and it starts seeming pretty insincere. Now, the marker, here's what he said he was going to do. He said he wasn't going to do that behavior again. He wasn't going to mock, and he wasn't going to have a personal attack. Now, if he had held to that, I think we might find some authenticity. We might be able to have to say he has a right to an opinion with which we disagree, mm-hmm. and he has authentically apologized because he has held true to his changed behavior. But he didn't hold true. Raphael forwarded me two other links where what he does is he again starts, he doesn't do into a lisp, but he starts mocking Joel's voice again in a different way, but he's still mocking it. And then what's happening is that he's also, his accent, the way that he's mocking, it's right on the edge of a lisp. It's interesting because Chris then crosses another line, because what he does is he starts talking about that what he thinks is that homosexuality is tied to child molestation. And he outs his brother-in-law. He says that my gay brother-in-law and his partner both were molested. That's pretty personal information to be sharing. So what we have to sort of just hold, I think the takeaway for me on this piece, and I want to come to another piece, mm-hmm. on this piece of it is we have somebody who is just not particularly well-formed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying informed, well-formed as a human being. He's tilted in some way. He just trounces across something that I think would be pretty sacred for his brother-in-law in deciding to disclose that kind of information on the airways to justify his own position. Mm-hmm. So it's sad, and it's what you see in the wake of these kinds of apologies. Let's look at another dimension. I think this is sort of interesting. So GLAAD came in the wake of this, and GLAAD said that what was going to happen is they were going to sit down with Chris, with the manager of his parent station, and GLAAD, and quote, and now I quote what GLAAD said, to discuss what a solution will look like. Now what's interesting is where was Joel in that conversation? When we start talking about apologies, we have to start noticing, so who was harmed by the wrongful conduct? Tiger Woods, great example. Tiger Woods' apology, it starts with his family, but what people were saying was, so why was he really doing it? Well, there are multiple categories of people who were harmed by Tiger Woods' behavior. His family, his wife first, his children, his parent, his mother. Then, though, there are his family of supporters. Then there are the people who were sponsoring him, who pay him. So his apology is a more complex apology because it has to address this inner circle, but then the various circles through which the harm had flowed. So what happens then, you know, here we have GLAAD coming in without Joel. So we don't know what Joel needed. A critical question is when someone's been harmed is, what does the party who's been harmed need to heal? No one's really asking Joel about this. For all we know, Joel didn't care. For all we know, Joel looked at Chris and sort of saw who he was and didn't
want to. He said he's a jerk and move on with my life.
Why am I going to allow someone who is sort of this malformed to affect me? Mm-hmm. He may have made that decision. It's just complicated.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we take a break? We'll be back. There's a lot more to this because I have a couple of things I want to ask you about on this too. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
If you're looking for an end-of-the-year tax write-off, it's not too late to donate your used car to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program. It can all be handled in time for this year's taxes. Just call 877-KNON-AUTO, and we'll arrange a convenient time to pick up your donation. The proceeds benefit Great Community Radio here on KNON. Call 877-KNON-AUTO or go online to KNON.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Mama Grizzly, Patty Fink. It's your new name. And LaRon Landis. In the studio with us today is Lee Taft and Raphael McDonald. We are going to let Raphael speak. He's just sitting
here. I've never hesitated speaking before.
Oh, he's shy. We're talking a little bit right now about apology. On another station, there was a homophobic rant by one of their talk show hosts, and he made an apology and then...
Sort of,
and then did it again.
And you have to remember, I mean, come on, the guy's in his 20s. You know, I mean, there's a little bit of maturity factor.
Is it an excuse, though? I don't think that's
an excuse. No, it's not an excuse, but this is very typical, I think, of people who are not, when we say malformed, I think that's part of it. I think it's an issue of maturity. He hasn't met probably a lot of people in his life, certainly not when he meets at the age of 30 and 40 and 50. He's going to have been around the block a little bit more.
Actually, what saddens me about the story that I didn't know until Leif just said is that he does know someone who, in fact, is gay, his own brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I understand that just because you have a gay relative or a friend of a friend who's gay, that you're not going to change your whole perspective of what you think about it. But you would think you would have a little more sensitivity to it, and apparently he does not at all. So
well,
I was assuming it's his sister's brother, so that just saddens me even more.
Well, Carl Palladino had a nephew who was gay.
Who quit his campaign.
Yeah, who quit after all the homophobia.
Here's what bothers me about it. He says, I was bullied when I was a kid, just as much, if not worse, than Joel Burns. Now, kids who are being bullied for being gay, how much would this guy help him if he said it in the right way and in a helpful way, if he did his own It Gets Better to them and said to them, you know, I was bullied also. I'm not gay, but I was bullied also. And you know what? Now I have my own radio show. Now I'm doing okay. Now I'm whatever. And other people are bullied too. You're not alone.
Yeah, but how is that any different than he talks about Joel Burns being special, making it sort of special that he did it from the council seat. And to me, he's just being a leader in the community who happens to be gay, who used his forum to say, hey, this is, you know, all these kids are killing themselves. It happened to me. It gets better. No different than Kroc saying it on the air on his own show.
But he could have,
because he had a forum.
But here he's not being helpful. He's saying, I was terrorized by two different guys. Get over it. That's not helpful to kids who are thinking
suicide. You know what I get from listening to that, especially when he revealed that he was bullied also? It almost sounds like he's jealous, in fact, that it's like a competition. That Joel had a bigger forum to get his story out, and he didn't. Even though he's on a radio, it's a little station that not that many people listen to. It sounded like it was kind of a competition thing. Well, why do you get to sit in front of the city council and talk about this, and I didn't?
Well, yeah, one of the things that I think bothered him, or that he came up with that bothered him, was that it was brought up in front of the city council, and of course we're dealing with bullying here in Dallas, not at the city council, but at DISD.
Before you go there, one thing maybe to think about is to think about that maybe Chris is unhealed from his being bullied. That really what we're seeing is that he has found a forum where he is allowed to spew hate speech. Mm-hmm. There's a violence to his show. He talks about that where he is trying to rally the troops and on the people who are listening to him, saying we are at war, that what's going on, and I quote, he says, we're at the altar of gayism. And he said that this is a culture war. And so what you're listening to is that speech can become violent. Mm-hmm. And someone who is unhealed from a violent history, mm-hmm. that someone who starts as a victim and it does not do their work, can become an offender.
And he said that his brother-in-law who was gay?
Yes.
His brother-in-law and his partner both were
molested.
So there's a history of violence in his family.
Well, I don't want to link that. Those sound like separate things. What Chris says about himself is that he himself was bullied for 2 years by two guys. That what has happened is it's the sort of the simplistic kick the dog deal. That we have a man that's in his 20s. I don't know how old he is, but we have someone, Patty says, is in his 20s. So He's a young man who is bullied. He is now bullying on the airways. So what it sounds like is that he's never had the opportunity to do the work he needed to do to heal the harm. And so what he's doing is he's passing it on in a different way. Mm-hmm. Joel's passing it on in a way to help other people heal. Chris is having it passed along in a way to continuing to perpetuate violence, which is what we're hearing from him on the airways.
Another thing I found sort of typical in these so-called apologies is his assertion that he's now the victim, saying that, okay, well, wait a minute, you all are saying that I'm the bullying. I'm bullying. Well, look at all these emails. That's exactly what you're doing is bullying to me. And I just think about, you know, the last Dr. Laura fiasco. Same thing she said was, well, look what you're doing to me. I'm the actual victim. I mean, is that really typical in these so-called apologies?
I don't think it's typical in apologies, but it's typical to notice that someone who is an offender, and when they are confronted in their offense, they start feeling like a victim. And so what they want to do is they want to start calling themselves a victim in order to take the light away from the harm they've caused.
Which is what groups like the Christian Coalition or the, you know them, Patty, because you subscribe to all of their garbage. But any
American
of these,
Family Association, Family Research Council.
Any of those, all of a sudden, they're portraying themselves as the victim of the violence that the gay community is perpetrating on them. Were there any other points that you saw in
I wanted to sort of tag our responsibility to not elevate this guy. I wanted to tag the opportunity to pay attention that if we're going to do reparative work, and an apology is a piece of a reparative process, if we're going to do it, that it's to make sure, if whether you're a GLAD or whoever you are, that if you're coming in organizationally or institutionally to help, to make sure that you include the party who is actually slurred, and that was Joel. We're slurred because of the way that he stereotypes us in his violent speech. But it's important when you're doing that process to make sure that everyone who has been harmed is at the table, to make sure all voices are heard so that the reparative process is inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Does the fact that he was bullied himself add another layer here of something that needs to be done?
I mean, my hope for him is that he will have the opportunity for some sort of intervention for himself to recognize that really that a piece of what he's doing vocationally is bullying, mm-hmm. a piece of what he's doing is there's a violence mm-hmm. to his demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
So you hope that he finds a way mm-hmm. to get some healing for whatever is propelling that sort of inner kind of hate.
Right, right. Do you want to do the entertainment report? Because you have a piece in here that's going to fit into
yeah,
this.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Why don't we go to the entertainment report then? Okay, it's not playing
so
for whatever reason.
We just got equipment problems.
Go ahead.
All right. Rosie O'Donnell revealed this week that she is cancer-free after awaiting a biopsy on some tissue after doctors found two lumps in her breast. The current Sirius XM radio host lost her own mother to breast cancer at the age of 39, and Rosie was just 11 years old. I didn't know she was that young. Rosie also announced that, along with the good news on her blog, and she added that, things were as close to perfect as life gets. So good for her. That is wonderful news. The teenage boy known as Trey, who was called the F-word from Sarah Palin's 16-year-old daughter Willow Palin on Facebook after Trey criticized her new show, her new reality show. He says that he does not accept Willow and Bristol's apology, adding that Willow uses homophobic language so often that she in fact could be a homophobe. Now, although Bristol issued a public apology on Facebook, Trey says that neither one of them had contacted him directly. Maybe if they were sincere and honest and straight with me, I would consider, but it would have to be direct.
Well, it wasn't just him. There was another guy who's, I think it was a different guy's actual page.
It was.
If you read all of the conversation, which was incredibly juvenile, but you know, it's kind of like, I know you are, but what am I? It was that kind of
right,
spitting spew, you know. But Willow, I thought, was incredibly homophobic.
Very homophobic.
And where does she get this stuff? And if she just cuts it off when she's at home with her parents?
Doubt it.
That's the big question I think most people are asking. Not that these kids should have their spotlight any more than they are, but their parents have put them out there.
Well, you know, Willow didn't issue an apology at all, neither has her mother, but it was Bristol, who's currently on Dancing with Stars. She is issued somewhat of an apology, but I don't know. What do you all think about that? I mean...
We have the apology expert here.
Do you know much about the story?
I don't know anything about the story, but I think it's important to hear what the young man who is the object of the slur is asking for. And that's the reparative piece that's missing. That's that piece that I was talking about with Joel. Mm-hmm. Maybe Joel needs that, maybe Joel doesn't. But it's important here to listen that this young man does need it. And if there is an authentic desire to correct behavior and to heal it, that kind of communication should be forthcoming.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, the exchange that happened was, I think it was a guy named Matt that actually posted the original thing that said basically that Sarah Palin's Alaska, as it's airing on TLC network, he said it's a big fail.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a constructive criticism.
It was just a comment on,
yeah.
And she came on and she and Bristol both were blasting this guy, how dare you diss my family, and... You know, that sort of thing. So they were really mad that he didn't like the show. But he was, and all they kept saying was, "We don't like the show. It sucks." And they just launched into this tirade against everybody who was against it.
See, this is where I love Sarah Palin. She always misses every opportunity to cut things off, to say the right thing, and just move on with it. I think what she should have said was, because the real problem in the gay community is. The language that she used,
yes.
that she called the kid the F word and everything.
Repeatedly.
So all Sarah needed to do was say, it's been addressed at home. And, you know, I mean, and it's a personal family matter here. I really think that would be enough from her, because it shows that, no, we're not teaching the kids this. You know, because you're saying, Patty, that, well, where does she get this from?
Mm. So. Well, she certainly tossed them around with great ease, it looked like to me.
Yeah.
But,
you know,
we don't know.
Well, and I saw on CNN one of their, you know, regular doctor psychologists that comes on the show. You know, he sort of was giving her a slide because she's only 16 years old. You know, this is the response of a 16-year-old, he said. And, in fact, that the F word is thrown around by teenagers so commonly that it's not necessarily used as directed at homosexuals.
See, I think
I disagree with that. I totally disagree with that. By 16, I knew what any bigoted epithet was and the use of it. I mean, she's not 10. She's 16. She knows what she was saying. I mean, we wouldn't give somebody a 16-year-old slide on using the N-word.
Exactly. And why anyone in any context, in any familial situation, would say this is normal behavior for a teenager.
Teenager, no.
To throw around incredibly homophobic words. I think it's the premise is wrong.
And I think
that's
and I think that's the basis of bullying. You know, it's part of growing up. Kids being kids.
Well, it's not that case with when they do toss around say the N word. That's not normal.
That's
not what we would slap as normal.
Right. And last, after being on a back burner for almost 2 years now, the movie about Liberace is finally ready to start production. The movie stars Michael Douglas as Liberace and Matt Damon as Scott Thorson. That's his alleged partner. I know, interesting casting. Michael Douglas. But, you know, I thought it was weird when Sean Penn got cast in Milk, but he was wonderful.
Oh, that didn't surprise me at all. Michael Douglas doing Liberace.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's see what he does. Now, interesting enough, this movie is going to be told from Scott Thorson's point of view, because we all know Liberace is no longer here, passed away in 87 from complications of AIDS. Now, here's what I didn't know, that Liberace vehemently denied being gay and successfully sued the Daily Mirror in 1957 for implying that he was. I never knew that. So this is going to be an interesting movie. Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because just recently they dismantled the Liberace Museum in Vegas.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, kind of gone out of business.
And,
you know, they probably need to resurrect that if they've got a big movie.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
People will be interested
should.
To
they
go.
Should. Yeah. And last, I just want to throw a quick shout out to my dear friend Austin Harmon, who's turning... 39, inching closing to the big 40 on Tuesday. Happy birthday, Austin. And last week, during Pledge Drive, he called at the end of the show, but we missed his call, and he wrote us a big, fat check. So thank you very, very much from Austin. We love you here at the KNON.
Thank you.
Okay, now, what you were talking about, and Joel, and bullying policy, gets us right back to Lee. It's a wonderful segue. I didn't do it real smoothly, but it is.
Okay, you got the point.
bullying policy. You were involved in the new bullying policy. And here in Dallas, we did not deal with it on the city council because nobody in the city council came out talking about being bullied. But we did deal about it at DISD. No city in Texas has a bullying policy that specifically includes gays and lesbians, except for Dallas now.
Okay. Well, Fort Worth does. I mean, as...
There's a little bit more to do that. The sexual orientation is in their non-discrimination and non-harassment. But you'll remember DISD added sexual orientation back in 95. If you compare bullying policy to bullying policy, and there's a specific designation called FFI local, there's the bullying policy by TEA and TASB, Fort Worth doesn't.
Okay.
So there's to correct that. There were some questions last week. They're kind of ferreted out, but no, that's the correct answer is no, Dallas is the only one.
And in fact, Dallas's policy of non-harassment has been around for a long time and has included sexual orientation. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, okay. I think
okay. the
confusion, let's clarify, because what Dallas just did, what difference will and can it make?
The policy, it's what is called an enumerated policy. You can have a non-enumerated policy, and what that means is it just says there's no bullying. What an enumerated policy does is it is specific in defining the categories of people who are protected by the policy. This is the work that Raphael, Patty, all of us have been working on to have happen, is to get DISD to come forward. The original policy that came forward was a non-enumerated policy, and the work of Resource Center Dallas, Patty, all of us has been to move that to an enumerated policy. It's why Thursday night's 9-0 vote is just such a fantastic vote, because it was a complicated process. We had lots of pushback from different trustees. There's been a lot of education that's been going on. We have had the opportunity. Raphael's work he's been just loaded with this for the past 6 weeks. This is what's been happening. But what was wonderful is to see that I think that the result is what happens when we collaborate as a community. The Resource Center Dallas, Lambda Legal, DGLA, LULAC, Raphael, who am I missing here? There are lots of...
Cathedral of Hope is weighted, certainly. Equality March. I mean, there's also... You could spend the Academy Awards and give a long list.
This was a collaborative process. It's what was powerful about it. What was helpful is we had trustees that were willing to send drafts of the policies to us. We were allowed to send comments back. That's the kind of work that Raphael and I've been doing constantly for the past couple of weeks, is working with these policies in the language. So the power of the language is that it isn't just sexual orientation. It's sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. That was an important extension so that each group is defined there. And then it's important so what happens is that it's clear who is being protected. That's the beauty of the policy. It's why we worked so hard to have it become an enumerated policy.
Well, you noticed that early October, when a lot of the bullying was and the suicides resulting from anti-gay bullying were in the news so heavily, there were lots of conversations on different media about this. And you would hear from the Family Research Council that they wanted the generic, no bullying. Nobody gets bullied. And every argument against this is that you have to name it. It's not even effective unless you tell the kid or the staff member or whoever what they did wrong. If they don't really understand that this is prohibited, that you can't, you know, pick on somebody because they're Jewish. You can't pick on somebody because they're gay or you think they're gay. You know, I mean, you have to name it. Well, it's not effective otherwise.
Glisson came forward with a study that's a few years old that said that the distinction is that in a non-enumerated policy, they're not effective. What happens is that if you do not specifically designate the categories of people who are protected, then what ends up happening is the policy itself doesn't really have any kind of effectiveness. By as soon as you enumerate, it immediately becomes a more effective policy. That was the piece of what we were doing. I mean, Raphael and I were doing, having research done, we're putting it together. Cece and I wrote the op-ed that was in the Dallas Morning News this week, because what we were wanting to do is we were wanting to bring forward that there's empirical data. It isn't just that this is us saying this is what we want, but there is an empirical basis in wanting to have an enumerated policy.
Right, because the logical thing is don't bully anybody. It seems logical to me, and it actually works in one school. Actually, two schools, the school Danny works in, Laurent's partner, and also North Dallas High School. They have zero tolerance for bullying, and they stop it. And kids told us from that high school, oh, yeah, I heard the F word one time, and they gave him a ticket, and, you know, those kids, they just learn, we don't do that here. And they have a zero tolerance. So it seems like it should work, but it's only going to work where people really have the enumeration, I guess, going on in their minds and understand. You don't bully him, you don't bully him, you don't bully him, you don't bully her. And you understand no bullying, and you really understand what bullying is. This way it explains
it. Well, there it is, right? You really understand what bullying is. Yeah. So what the invitation is now, so now you have a policy. So now what's going to have to happen is the education that gets tied to the policy. Mm-hmm. And then we'll find out. The proof will be in the pudding.
Right. So we're going to talk more about this. I need to take a break. We're talking to Lee Taft and to Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON P.O. Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at knon.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you are supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive? Call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
A 16-year-old cheerleader at Silsbee High School near Beaumont, Texas, was raped at a party by two of the school's basketball players. Pressed charges, but the boys were allowed to plead guilty to a lesser charge of assault. During the game, she refused to cheer for her rapist. The school superintendent threw her off the squad. Her family sued based on free speech, but the Texas Court of Appeals ruled that the girl had no right to free speech since the school could dictate her speech in her capacity as a cheerleader.
Police in New Albany, Indiana needed some informants for a counterfeiting operation. They decided that the group most likely to be cheated with counterfeit money was drug dealers. So they put out a call for help. The police spokesman said, well, what we're asking for today is we want all the drug dealers to call us. We want to get all your information and exactly what happened in any of your dealings. Then he added, trust us.
Rhode Island heterosexual state senator Christopher Mazzelli was the chairman of the rules committee, but apparently he didn't think rules applied to him. He fraudulently applied for a variety of loans, some in the name of his wife's mother, worth a total of $1.7 million. Earlier this month, he resigned his seat and faces up to 30 years in prison on each of eight counts.
I have another cheerleader one. A Madison Heights, Michigan mom didn't like one of her daughter's cheerleading cheers. Our backs ache, our skirts are too tight, we shake our booties from left to right. So when the mom complained, they threw the six-year-old off the squad.
Six.
Wow.
And that's this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
We are talking a little bit about DISD's new anti-bullying policy. Lee Taft is our guest, and he helped work on it. Raphael McDonald also. Raphael, you collected copies of policies from around the country, didn't you?
Yeah, one of the things we wanted to do in helping the district formulate this policy was give them some examples of successful policies in other parts of the country. The policy that DISD used was
mainly based on a policy out of Broward County, Florida, which is the Fort Lauderdale area. And actually, one of the trustees, Bernadette Nuttall, found that particular policy. Some of the other policies that we contributed, though, that they did look at, Charlotte, North Carolina, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which just passed theirs back in September, and the Los Angeles Unified School District, which has actually had theirs for a couple years. Parts of the LA USD were used in the policy here in Dallas.
How are they working?
Well, all of them are fairly new. I said Philadelphia's just passed theirs in September. Charlotte's passed theirs in March of this year. So some of them are really just a little too new to determine.
What about LA?
LA's does appear to be working. LA's appears to be very successful. Their language is, some portions of their language are used in the model policy that GLSEN uses to, talk to school districts in terms of what a model bullying policy needs.
Can you all talk a little bit about how this new policy is going to actually help staff, school staff, and teachers? Because, you know, we've heard before teachers say, especially when it comes to gay and lesbian bullying, well, that's just part of it. You know, if you're going to be out, you're just going to have to deal with that.
Which is incredibly inappropriate.
Incredibly inappropriate. Does this policy address that in some way?
Well, I think there's a couple things to say that it addresses. First off, I think the fact that it's real or perceived. Let's say that male student who is straight, who may have some feminine characteristics like music, or that female student who prefers playing sports or something like that. That real or perceived is one of the most important things. Second of all, as Lee has talked about and that we've asserted the whole time, the fact that we have enumerated categories that specifically outline who it is that is being protected. Third, this policy, this 8-page-long policy, actually outlines the steps, the grievance procedures. Who does what? Who gets reported to what? What are the range of punishments? What are the appeals of these punishments? That sort of thing. By having a clear roadmap, you're able to determine exactly where you end up going when you have a violation. And by the same token, if, let's say, somebody is, you know, passing on a false violation, it shows what you do there, too.
You're saying punishments. What about remediation? Because that's an important part of apology, but it's an important part of curing this.
That'll be the educational piece. That'll be the opportunity that we'll have as we help the school district design what is going to be the educational piece that we really do talk about, that remediation. So someone's bullying, how do we help them learn what that is so we don't have future Chris Kronks, mm-hmm. that someone who's been bullied or being bullied or bullying, that we have we intervene and help heal.
Hey, reading back on Chris Kronks' apology, I'm wondering how much of it, you know, you said in the policy it's real or perceived. I'm wondering what was perceived about him, that he was bullied. He doesn't state exactly, and I'm just curious.
I don't know.
You know, it's very possible. That
one thing I noticed on his official bio, he says that he was the son of a Chicago police officer. So it may very well be that some of his bullying has stemmed from the fact, oh, well, your dad's a cop.
Oh.
So, I mean, that doesn't give him an out, but I saw that in his official bio.
Okay.
Now, Dallas used to have a really active and very, you know, connected chapter for GLSEN, and that's not been the case most recently. But they have a program called the Lunchbox Training that they do for teachers that's been, I believe, done in a number of schools, but certainly not district-wide. Is that something you're looking at to recommend?
We part of another member of our coalition in having this come forward is we worked with GLSEN, and their local rep helped us identify a student to come forward and to speak. And that student was particularly effective the other night. So, yes, we'll be working with GLSEN and look forward to learning what we can. We want it to be a best practice, state-of-the-art conversation that we initiate.
Well, the lunchbox trainings that they've done in the past is pretty comprehensive about creating safe spaces, and particularly for faculty and staff. And I think that's going to be the key, that the whole policy, the point of the policy is to empower everyone in the process. Including parents. And I loved the comment from one of the board trustees the other night about this is a message to parents of bullies, is that if you're the instigator of this kind of attitude and that it's okay to, you know, treat people this way, this policy speaks to you too, which I thought was tremendous. Because that is where it's coming from, a lot of it.
You know, and part of, you know, all these bullying stories that we've unfortunately have had to hear about is some of the kids have told, and nothing was done, like the case down in Houston. The little boy told someone at school and the bus driver.
And that was what was so bad about
yeah,
it.
And
right before he was beaten up, he told the bus driver, don't let me off here, they're going to beat me up. And the bus mm-hmm. driver told him, get off the bus.
And nothing is done about it. In this new policy, is there anything written about the consequences for when a pupil does tell an administrator and nothing is done about it?
Not at this point. That's one of the things that's going to need to be addressed, some of the roles that staff and faculty. There's also the issue of, for example, one of the students that spoke talked about the fact that, let's say, teacher-on-student bullying isn't covered. That's going to be a separate issue. As is now, the district has a non-discrimination policy, which simply covers sexual orientation, but their bullying policy covers gender identity and gender expression. You've got a little bit of a conflict there, so there's work yet to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, I thought that the stories from the board trustees were just tremendous, and were really quite a brought the whole thing home, that many of them had been bullied, and they could name their bully. And I just loved Bernadette Nuttall's story about Jackie Booker at Killeen High School, and she said, the very end of her comment, she said, and just so you know, Jackie Booker's in prison. And of course, the whole room erupted.
Are you serious? Well, that is, what a story.
Great. But everyone could name it. I was talking to my sister yesterday on the phone, and she could name her bully in school and when it was. And it was in second grade, and she still remembers that to this day. And it's amazing. It's true. It's very true for all of us. And these kids experiencing it now have amplified through all this media, you know, through texting and Facebook and all the other ways they can get to you. Mm-hmm. You can't even imagine it today.
You said there was some pushback from some of the board members. They all voted for it, but what was the pushback about?
We're hearing a variety of things. Originally we heard that we had some pushback on the enumeration because of the concern that it was going to increase the sort of the potential kinds of lawsuits. So there was a legal concern. We had pushback. We heard originally pushback that there might be some religious objection to the notion of sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression being a protected category, that there was a pushback on that. All of those things were things that we were behind the scenes working with, addressing, and obviously in a successful way.
So it sounds like they were more good questions that they were asking as opposed to, no, we can't do this.
When a school district was doing what I think that we have to keep acknowledging that the Dallas Independent School District has taken a bold, courageous step here. And when you're doing an innovative and courageous movement, you want to be thoughtful in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So we found the questions appropriate. We liked that it engaged us. It allowed us to look across the community to who our partners were, who could answer specific questions, and that's precisely what we pulled together so that the specific objections that we understood were addressed.
Now that this policy is in place, who have we heard from across Texas that wants to copy it? Have we? Or we don't know yet.
Is it too soon?
That's not to talk about at this point, but just keep watching.
But you have heard.
There are people who are looking at what we have done and are looking at ways that something similar could happen in their areas. Hmm. That's about all I'm going to go.
That's fine.
Great.
I'm really not looking for specific places, Houston, with your lesbian mayor.
Hey, but she did something great this week.
Yes, she did.
She put in place the first ever transgender judge in the state of Texas.
In Texas, yeah.
So that's wonderful.
And a great champion in our community, Phyllis Fry. Yeah. So that's exciting.
Do you know Phyllis?
I do know Phyllis.
Yeah. She's a nice person. She's a wonderful speaker. She's just very dynamic. And, you know, people are petrified what she's going to be doing in her municipal traffic court, you know.
Now, there's another judge that was elected in California, yeah. And there was...
And one appointed. Yeah, so there are three
who are transgender and openly transgender. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting to watch on some of the blogs online of stories of this, the people who get it, the people who don't get it, it's really tough. Mm-hmm. And really the same was true with the bullying policy at DISD. If you look at the local blogs, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's not fair that the gay people get special protection. And then people chiming in and saying, no, it happened to be that the GLBT community stepped up to say these things need to be listed and enumerated, but that doesn't mean that you're not protected. It's not just GLBT people. It's
right.
You know, gender, religion, national origin, it's all of those things. So it's an entire community of people who are protected.
One of the things that I found interesting, a category that they added that honestly I don't think it even really crossed our radar screen, was real or perceived political belief. Mm-hmm. So that if you support candidate A or candidate B, we won't mention any names, but, you know, and you might get bullied because, oh, I'm a fan of so-and-so or I'm a fan of this person, then that might lead to bullying. Well, that's covered.
We did an informal poll on the Voice about what were you bullied about, and obviously it's The Voice. The number one reason was sexual orientation. Number two, Patty?
Beats me.
Being short.
Being short. Oh, wow.
Are you serious?
Would I pick on you for another reason?
My last name is Fink.
Oh.
Those are the two things I heard about, but I never considered it bullying. I considered it more like teasing because I very early on accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't change how tall I am.
One of the things that I think will be important in this is that, so now we have a policy, but we are going to have to culturally start looking more deeply and saying, so where is bullying coming from? As opposed to trying to just stop it, where is it coming from systemically? And you come to us as adults, just when you mentioned, when Raphael mentioned political parties, look at where the conversation has come in our country, that we're not able to have a conversation. The violent speech that is being tolerated in the public sphere is something that we as adults need to notice what we're modeling. So we can put these kinds of policies in place, but it becomes really essential for us to ask what has happened to civility in these United States and start wondering about that and saying, if we think that it's just going to be, if a policy is going to be the corrective, we're going to have to look more deeply at how we as adults engage with each other about differences of opinion and different ideas. How do we start having some different kind of civility? And what really, if we're going to look more deeply, what is this cause in this break in having any kind of civil conversation?
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, I mean, this would be a completely different show, and it would be lovely to talk to you about it, Lee, but there have been several different things happening in the news recently that I think are important. One was an interesting study by CNN that it's just a tiny, tiny portion of people who actually listen to cable news who are on those extremes. It's about 5 million people in a population of, how many, 300 million?
350.
So, you know, when you look at the actual numbers of people listening to this kind of stuff on a constant basis, it's not everybody. Most everybody is out there just living their lives, and they're not extreme over here or extreme mm-hmm. over here. And another one was one that just came out about what the public knows and what they're educated about. The Pew Research did. For example, most people don't know that the Republicans won the House. A majority of Americans don't know that Republicans won the United States House. So, I mean, here's a disparity in who's getting attention. Because we would think about it, well, most Tea Party Muslims must be pervasive across the country. Well, no, that's not true. It's a vocal minority. And the same is true on the right and the left. It's kind of interesting.
We are completely out of time. Lee, I want to thank you for being here. Raphael, thank you for being here. And please come back again. We didn't even get to talk about Lawrence v. Texas at all and what's happened since then as a result of that brilliant decision. And Lee was very involved in that, being the director of Lens Legal at the time.
But thanks for coming on, Lee. So
coming
first
again.
Time he's been on since the Crack House. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for
studio.
Having me. Enjoyed being here. Thanks for the conversation.
Nice to have you, and we're going out with music from?
Going Variegated Day with Donna Summer.
And next week our guest is Sonia.
Cause it took so long to make it. the sweet green icing blowing.